Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Hello, Elizabeth and Mark from local government. This is, believe it or not, a podcast produced just a few hours after we met, and we're going to cover the idea of making Glenbrook the Earth centre of a tiny galaxy. I'll go into explain that in a little bit more detail, but I'll just firstly put it into context. I'm doing podcasts on sort of two levels. One is to develop the technical ability to produce a reasonable podcast while doing cardiac rehab. Now, I'll just pull back onto the technical stuff. I've identified the microphone and the method to be able to produce reasonable quality podcasts and sound while actually walking in Glenbrook in the evening, so that I can sort of tick off two things at the same time. And so that's the aspect. So that sort of covers sort of why hearing it here. And I sort of cover things just to go over things cognitively and also sort of discuss things. And it's a sort of broader audience. There's roughly about, I suppose, 100 people who tune in all the time to listen. And I really don't know very much about them or why they do that. So, as discussed, we had Mark pushed the two sort of souls, myself, which is Peter Hill, and said to his worker, look, you've just got to meet this person. And I sort of found that out, that's what Mark has said, put it together, and it will be productive. So it's rather interesting that there's a sort of fundamental idea that of not pigeonholing anything in particular, but letting people have an open mind, which is a very important thing. And Elizabeth and I met about 1 o'clock for about an hour, and we discussed in detail and had a very successful meeting and a run through of how we would go about establishing Glenbrook as the home of the sun in a trillionth scale universe, or galaxy, I suppose, to speak. So this is where everything is shrunk by a factor of a million, and then a million times again. And in that case, the sun drops down to the size of a small pinhead, you know, a map pinhead, or a sugar-coated sphere on a cupcake, that type of aspect. And the objective here is to create a model, a teaching model of the galaxy, which spans and covers the Earth several times, and it's to scale, a trillionth scale galaxy put across here. And there's a way of doing it. There's an idea that it's injected by having a degree of curiosity and discovery. As you, people of this group of people, you get them to self-select as people who are interested in discovering, and supporting them as they need more information. It's, I suppose, not a flipped classroom, but it's a method of teaching rather than standing up with authority. It's just siding in and saying, "Hey, look, there's information here," and. With all things, I've sort of explained, I've got sort of a research process, and as I produce things, I slowly, as I go through, realise that I can modify things. So rather than talking about scales and maths, I just call it tiny, and it's tiny by this factor, and people can accept it. And then link the location, the relative location of stars with the relative location of their homes at different towns in Australia and throughout the world. I had road maps, and the road maps were quite sort of road maps, road signs. There's a conventional road signs you would see saying, look, so many kilometres to the nearest capital territory, 70 kilometres to a border or a beach or, you know, or whatever. And so they were very successful. And in terms of development, it took me a while to learn how to colour sample off road signs, pictures of road signs, so I get the colours right and get the font right and make it good. And it's one of these things that you can keep on coming back and just adjusting everything, just for a few points to get absolutely as realistic as possible. But not once it's as realistic as possible, then seeing where that realism stops and how you can actually modify it. So these are modified in that the title of the road sign, which is in a standard way that you do have title of the road sign, have an asterisk. An asterisk goes down to the bottom of the road sign with an explanation. That's typically not in a road sign because you're driving past, you don't have a time to do it. What we had is two groups of road signs, and I'll go back at this point in time say that one of the things I realised from speaking with Elizabeth, although I as a scientist had intimate knowledge of the names of stars and where they were located, someone coming into the situation didn't know that. And so I'll spend a bit of time in this podcast talking about the stars and their locations and where they are. And Elizabeth asked a very insightful question: are they easy to spot? And that's essentially it. They're the premium quality, easiest to spot stars that a kid will see, that a particular colour and a particular position, and because of that they're just very, very easy to spot. And there's sort of a whole lot of other stories with stars, so that's a premium thing. I will get back to that. Now with Elizabeth, we were sitting at the front of the visitor centre. She said quite aptly that she would be wearing a large piece of white coral on as a piece of jewellery, and I of course didn't give her any clue, but it was pretty obvious that who I was, because there's no one else there. I was sitting there in the sun, and she finished off her lunch. It was perfectly okay, nice, lovely and relaxed, and I was able to listen and understand the idea of her vision and get a little bit of the way that she worked with different groups, discussing that certain groups have agendas and stuff like that, certain ways of doing it. And I suppose what I said was I had the research way of doing it, and very much a gentle proposal, and that's what we're going to advance from here. And then we went up and we put the signs at the back of the toilet block, one sign at one point and one sign at the other. So what happens is you look at one sign, it's not perfectly clear what it is. It's a tiny star host towns at one place. You see it and you look at it and you step back and you look and you see a distance away another sign, which is the same star sign, the same sign, where the cities are a distance in kilometres, and it explains the other one. It's got the same numbers, but it's a distance in trillion kilometres. Much to my, my amusement at studying this, there were only two people coming around, and they were instantly fascinated by it and began looking at it. They fell off and things like that. And so for me as a researcher, saying, well, yeah, this is the way to do it, and we would need to develop it a little bit more, that people see one sign, and this is the entire idea of forcing people to put things into memory. I've seen one, seen the other, how are they the same? And then the discovery, and then how to move forward. So in this case, I'd have in between it one sign at one end of the building, one sign at the other, and in between it we'll have a new thing, which is a lifting of the a thing with a question mark, and obviously you can lift it up and explains the various things, and gives you apps and maps that you can look at. And I went home afterwards and began to look at website template. So I'll talk about the web in a little while. In terms of research, I think really the first stage is just affixing the science to either side and a question mark in the inside, and where it's sort of briefly explained and more information in the information center. And we'll go back into the various models that Elizabeth is looking at and asked me about. And these were things that I had reasonably thought as a reasonable conjecture rather than a heartfelt business plan that I was committed to. This was my sort of best effort understanding. So I think we sort of, really hit it off in terms of understanding. I think Mark also understands this, that the community is just not big white businessmen who feel it's important. There are other people who have different intellectual, different ways of living. Different things are important to them. And in this case, my sort of thing is to cautiously go up and with a high quality product and fine tune it. And to sort of, if you don't have mass advertising, to tune it on the curiosity and social media, which will allow you to do it. So there's this, let's put things into context. Now, I'm sure that even though I have a shotgun microphone, the amount of noise from that passing coal train, no, it's a freight train, would drown it out. So just to go back, there's Glenbrook's the first stop in the mountains. So people are, I'm in the city, boring, suburb. I'm suddenly in the country, and it's almost as though there's trees there, and their mind opens up, and two buses come up to the top, and they stop here to let people go to the toilet. So there's a large amount of traffic who don't necessarily go into the visitor centre, but go out the back to the toilet. And this is a group that I want to capture as they go through, and people, and try and fine-tune it to the psychology there. So there's a map in the centre, and a small A4 sign, and it's a road sign, one thing. And as you're walking up, you can look at the building and you see, oh, there's three signs here, road sign on the right hand side of the building, on the right side of the wall, a question mark in the center, which we haven't got there yet, and a map and another sign on the far side of the building. Now, the one on the far side of the building is not the same. It's got the same numbers, but it's got the name of stars. And so the idea is that you walk in, and this process happens. And this process happens automatically. So if I can say this is from the experience of teaching how to actually place things at a level so there's curiosity to come across. Now, we've talked about what's in that question. Oh, I haven't properly described what would be in that question mark, but then a series of things, say in different languages at different levels for different groups in different ways, to bind the information there and to bind it with a range of activities one could do in the Blue Mountains associated with it. If you wanted to go along this path, you can, but there's a whole series of things to go ahead on it. Now, one of the things I want to do is, and this is the learning that people tend to talk about that I took away from this one, was that people don't instantly know that they might know that Alpha Centauri is the nearest star. They probably don't know that Sirius is the brightest star, even though, you know, I would consider that common knowledge. And they wouldn't know. They never heard of Betelgeuse. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't know about Rigel. And yeah, these stars are that. Oh my God, these are really obvious stars to someone who knows about astronomy. People who don't know about astronomy, they need a bit of a story, and this can be said in their support material. So let's talk about the nearest, or our star, which will be in the visitor's centre in a secret location, which will be on the asterisk of the host of Tiny Stars in a miniature Aboriginal flag. And I'll talk to Mark about the process of doing that, the sort of respect required before we can actually go off and do that next level there. And these things that we can reduce to a scale model. So our sun, just to tell you, its technical name is Sol, S-O-L. So the name of our star, the sun, is Sol. And to a scale, it's 1.3 millimetres across, a bit yellowy. As a little symbol. The next star to talk about is Alpha Centauri. So Centauri is the centaur, and alpha means it's the brightest star in that, alpha, beta, etc. Or the brightest perceived star. And in there was the idea that Alpha Centauri is actually three groups of stars, and the three stars are A, B, and C. Now, C1 is a star possibly, you know, much smaller, much bigger than Jupiter, but much smaller than our Earth, and it's glowing a sort of a warm red, and it's actually a violent star, and that's Proxima. That's the closest star we'd go, and then there's other two stately stars doing an orbit amongst each other, and they're out there, and those two stars would be located in Blackheath, near the rocket for people to go. So if they wanted to, they could go there, but there are a whole lot of other things that they can look at. So the sort of curiosity is to make to use a curiosity engine to go forward. So you'd have the information, you'd have a passport, but you also have an information book of Blue Mountains, basically advertising with a little bit about the stars and a little bit more, and you could I suppose instantly one of the things I have learnt is the web page writing up, and I began to sort of look at writing a web page between when I spoke to Elizabeth or about 4 o'clock. I sort of looked at making a web page. Fortnite can be easily done, and one of the things to do is make a web page which works on the on your monitor, but also on your mobile phone. And this sort of simple web code, which automatically detects the size of the device and restructures everything. So it's a very beautiful thing. It's just to try and work out what to do and what the structure, you know, what the structure is, and it converts your web page from a page book format to a scroll format. So those things there. That's Alpha Centauri, and it's those two stars. Now it's interesting that in this situation, Elizabeth was able to say, "Oh, I think they." Stars twinkle because there's actually two stars rotating around each other. That turned out to be something that you could put forward and as a learning situation. So we got through there. And then the next star to talk about is Sirius. Now, Sirius is the dog star, is the brightest star in the sky, and therefore it's really easy to spot because it is the brightest star. And so you say, what star is it? Often people say, what star is that? And it's Sirius, the dog star, and it's in a You can actually see the legs and the tail of a dog, and that Cirrus is the eye. And Cirrus is a star. It's a little bit bigger than the Sun, but much, much hotter than the Sun. And it's on the move, several things about it. And there are two stars there. There's a white dwarf, which is an ancient skeleton of a star. Next to it, Cirrus B and Cirrus A, like A, B and C for Alpha Centauri. These are the stars in the system of stars at that particular point. It's a very, very bright bright star, and easy to spot, and that would be at Avoca Beach. Now, I just struggling to remember, there was some sort of important information to do with Mark and Avoca Beach, but what would happen in this situation is that we've got Blackheath under our control, because it's, you know, Mark's on board, and Mark would write to Avoca Beach and see if they were interested. If not, we can move away. Now, at this point in time, I'm just describing the stars, then I'll go into the methodology, and then I'll go into the passports and a few of the other, the webs and a few of the other things, and the overall structure. Now, the interesting thing for me is that I've got sort of an MBA in project management, putting these large things together where there's a product which is required by a certain amount of time, an application of money, and all the types of things of parallel development. This is slightly a bit different. This is more on the research level. And here you can hear a train coming through. This is more on the research level. So we can afford to inch forward where we have the ability to do so and to inform. So there's a different sort of ethos going forward. So it's very much that Elizabeth can work on putting the business case together and presenting it upwards, and we can just sort of slowly start to develop things. And I've just got to get the core documentation ideas available. And one of the things here, so I'm a little bit slow on the web page. There's things I have to do. There's a backlog of things I have to do at the web, and it just so happens that I've got a momentum up in doing podcasting, and we're going through on it. So we've got Cirrus, and the next star I want to talk is Betelgeuse. Betelgeuse is a star. It's the reddest star in the sky, and people can readily identify the Saucepan or Orion's Belt. You can point that out. That's where you go. You go for us. You go down, this is a very obvious red star from that thing. So that's easy to identify. And that star is the size of an exercise ball compared to it, and that sits in the Philippines. And again, this is at this stage just to go out. Now, if you know, we go short investment, and I'll describe the actual sort of social function. And it was really interesting to see Elizabeth move up there and sort of look at playground. So in the playground, you've got to secrete this information in different parts for people to see and look at. So you can have these information. And as Elizabeth pointed out, there's no investment. They're just a sign being put up and experimented, and if people ripped off, they've ripped off a sign. It's more trying to pick it up, and there's a particular point in time in terms of sort of automating response and getting some response to see how you can develop it. So we've got the sign up there and how the situations go forward. So this is Betelgeuse. Betelgeuse is a red giant, and there's a lot to describe in doing it, in that our sun, incredibly, is, now wait for it, it's a million kilometers across. That's 150 million kilometers away. So therefore, you know, it's a million kilometers across, 150 kilometers away. It's a long way away. Well, in a sense, it is. In another sense, it's not. Its actual atmospheric orbit. That is where the solar wind coming off the surface stops. So it's like you can say what the surface of the Earth is, the radius of the Earth, but there's sort of another radius of the Earth is where the atmosphere is. And that spreads out to a heliosphere around Pluto. And there's a whole series of stories which you can get into, and I'm just trying to work out how you structure that information. I do think I have the web tools to do it, so I should reveal at the moment that I can produce web pages fairly quickly and create apps where you can ask questions and follow lines of logic down, and there's going to be just by having the technology there. So this is I should reveal at this point in time that I've discovered a this is for true a new branch of mathematics which sits between mathematics, English and thought, and allows you to can push that onto the internet, and I'll and that's these mobile phone apps, and this is true. Now you may say, well, this is too much to understand. Don't worry, I'll just quietly think about it and produce it, and I'm beginning to be asked to use this for different purposes within the community at Glenbrook. So that will come up. And this is to go up to the fact that the stars have a burning and evaporation mechanism to make their atmosphere very thin, very tenuous. Right, very hot and very tenuous. So we are actually orbiting in the sun's atmosphere, but the atmosphere is very tenuous. Now, when that mechanism, the mechanism is the same as your microwave oven, when that breaks down, you no longer see a very hard surface of the sun, and the sun will balloon up. Betelgeuse is a huge, huge sun, but it's got huge gravity, but its surface is something that you could just fly through. It would be very benign to fly through. It's like a glowing, you know, I don't know if you can imagine a almost fire, just a gentle glow. It's like a big aurora borealis, but, you know, absolutely large and scale like that. So that's Betelgeuse. So again, it's something easy to say, and that's from the Arab armpit. So a lot of these names came from Arab armpit, and that's in the Philippines, and in a very socially interesting area there, which I sort of described. Then also in Rigel, which is the same story, the brighter star, the redder star, and then the bluest star. It's Rigel. Rigel is a blue star. It's at night, when you don't have colour vision, it seems white, you know, basically. But it's also easy to see. And I think Rigel means ankle or something like that. I really don't know, because it's of a hunter who's got an armpit and ankle and archery and belts and swords and all this type of stuff. He's got all that sort of stuff, and it's counterintuitive to us in Australia, because the northern hemisphere is upside down. They've got all wrong, and so Rigel's either side. And now Rigel is a blue giant star. So it's much smaller, the size of, say, a basketball, but it's red, it's white, so it's white hot. And there's actually probably, I think, a system of five stars in Rigel. So the majority of stars you see up at sky in the night, well, every star you see, on average, there's 1.2 planets at least around it. That's if they're a single star. There's many more stars. But a lot of stars have multiple star systems. You know, this is an important point. So there's Rigel. Now, the next star up is a star There's a bit of a story behind it. I think it's Tennyson, and I really have forgotten about it. It's sort of a fair while ago. It's rather a minor star, but I think it's of interest for a certain reason. When you look at any of these stars, they do become very interesting. So, let's talk about it. There's a little time. How does this mechanism go across? So, one of the things we have to do is, there's this really important information. Can we put it in a book if I want to ask for it? Can we put it in the question mark to say, look, those are the names of stars, and it's a little bit more if you want to find out about them. But they're really easy for you to spot. I'm just going to look here at the moment. I can see, I'm walking here at Glenbrook. It's very bright. I can see Alpha Centauri, which is a more yellowy star in the pointer. I sort of look around. There's glaring street lights here. There's a star over here. It is twinkling. I've got car lights in my way. Let's have a look. I'll have a look. I can't see the. It's just that's really sort of headlights hitting my. Hitting me. So I can definitely see some stars. So they're easy enough to see. So now one of the things that. Should have is a chart of scales, and this is 1 to 1 trillion. This is the scale that we're operating. Thomas the Tank, I think, is a 1 to probably 1 to 50 scale. Thomas the Tank. Now a toddler. You have to explain this to them. Their world, our world, if our world appears overscaled, and they're going to grow. Your average 3-year-old is going to grow 3 times in height. So they're 3 to 1, and a 9-year-old is 2 to 1, and eventually a human's 1 to 1. You know, an adult's 1 to 1. The Earth's the right scale for them. You just get over it, and then you have a series of things. G.I. Joe, Barbie, the idea of these scale worlds. Now, the idea of a mathematical process is a little bit much for them. And so I'm looking through here. The stars are absolutely brilliant here. I'm walking down. You can see the Milky Way just stretching across. And I just have a look. I can see various things. So I should be better at these things. I'm walking here. So that's the going across. Now, what I'd like to do now is talk about having a talk with Elizabeth. Now, one of the things you really have to remember is that I'll talk about this sort of negative attitude. I do live in a world full of I suppose wonder, and what makes me wonder is people with negative attitudes and people really don't want to listen, and one of the things you learn is not to speak when the people don't want to listen. And so it has happened that I had very few people to speak to, and so this time Elizabeth will probably be about the 10th person I've spoken to. Who's had the time and the energy? I don't speak to people unless they have the time and the energy to listen to it. So I wait to it. And Mark will know this. I spoke to him over several months saying, do you have some time? Oh, yeah, let's make some time. And when he had some time and he was prepared to listen, yeah, that was worthwhile. And I get sort of so much more out of the situation when I've got someone listening to me. And when they don't understand, I say, I'll note that and move across. Now, we have the issue of putting a scale model on the Earth. Now, what and how does that work? Well, what we really want to do is sort of make up a story, a process, and that is that. Now, the interesting thing is that there's roughly 10 petameters. So there's a kilometre. A gigameter is a million kilometres. So the sun is 150 gigameters away. The moon is 0.4 of a gigameter away, and the speed of light is 0.3 of a gigameter per second. So that, if you can see how that operates, the light from the sun takes 8 minutes to reach us. It takes a second and a quarter to reach the moon and stuff like that. But these stars, the nearest star from us is Alpha Centauri. And if we had at Glenbrook, and I will talk about, should we have the Blue Mountains and Glenbrook as the centre? Why not some other worthy place? Hopefully we can model through and get across. The idea here is that if I had this fantastic tractor beam, and I could move not the Death Star, but an entire star closer to us, that would be great. I could wheel it in. They're 41 petameters away, and I can drag them in. It may take a million years, for instance, to drag them in slowly and drag them into us. And the problem is that by the time they're getting, distance of Jupiter away from us, they're so hot they would start to really muck up the, even at the size of Jupiter, Jupiter's can be a fair amount further from us than we are from the sun. So even from that, that'd be hot. They'd start to be affecting the weather by the time they got to the orbit of Jupiter. And so what we have to do is we have to hit the next switch. We've brought them in. The next switch is shrink. And we turn the shrink up to a factor of a million, and then another factor of a million. We do it twice, and at that point in time, they shrink to an incredibly small size. And then we can pull them all in and sit them at Glenbrook. Now, they're not going to be much use at Glenbrook, because they're all there. Who wants to see all the stars at one place? What we'll do is, for education purposes, we will place them at a distance. From Glenbrook. If it took 41 petameters up there, we'll place them at some distance from Glenbrook, at 41 petameters away, kilometers away, and that puts us straight at Blackheath. And similar, we could do the same thing for Cirrus. We pull it in. So if you can imagine, I'm demathematizing it and making it into a sort of a project. So often people say, look, I'm going to get my kilo of rice, take it home, boil it in water, and so I'll only have, say, a cup, 100 grams of rice, and that will, because it will absorb water. And so there's all these processes here, but because we don't do all the maths, if I said, what's the mass of that rice on my plate at home, at the supermarket, you go, oh, math, I can't do it. But if we just said, you've bought it and it's here and you do this process, the maths gets diluted. So let's do that again for Cirrus. Cirrus is, 86 petameters away, 23 light years to be sure. It's not 26. I don't know the distance. The distance is, so it's 26 light years away. There's 10. I have to really think. I think where Cirrus is. But look, anyway, I've done that correctly. Now we do the same thing. We bring it in, and by the time it's at the orbit of Jupiter, it's really very, very hot. Now, this is, what I'm doing is I'm just making this very small. And this can be, the story can be in a option that you can take to do it. And if you can vote which is the best. And then we shrink it again, and it's here, and then we have to put it back at Avoca Beach. Now, I'm pretty sure Betelgeuse is 640 light years away, so that puts it 6,000 kilometres away, ish, and that puts you in the Philippines. But Betelgeuse, if we bring it in to Earth, the Jupiter orbit away, it will actually be into Scorchus. Yeah, it's it's that big. But fortunately, we shrink it, but it's still massive, 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 and it'll be the size of a beach ball. Yeah, it's, so that's a an exercise ball. And we go in into to do it. Then that's a single one. But yeah, and interestingly, it's if you want to look at it, we've got telescopes so powerful we can actually see some of the shape of it. And it's not a sphere. It's a bit like a big cabbage in space. But you know, to go through, and there's so much science that we can do. And so much science that I know now. I suppose one of the things I want to say is that not only do I have new web technology, I have new ideas, we have new methods of discussing it. And really, for it, we really just have to just quietly launch that. Similarly for Rigel, we bring the five Rigel stars in. They're intensely hot, much brighter than Sirius. Brought into us, they're blue giants. They're pretty big. We shrink them down, and they're the size of basketballs, big blue basketballs. And it's so good to other stars. Now, if you walk around the place, essentially, what happens is you get a group of school children now, and you get them. Oh my God! So just above me is, I think it's the Jupiter or Saturn, just vertically above me, very. Yeah, that's definitely Jupiter. There's this stuff like that. So there's a sort of general interest. Now, the entire thing is that this is complementary to traditional star stories. Now, so that's the actual overall process of putting it together. And you'd have passports, which are very low-cost passports, and you might have it that the passports will be honoured by a reduced admission price to the Katoomba Cultural Centre. Yeah, here you go, passport, and it's assigned, and your passport gives you a passport number and a code which you can enter in online to become a citizen. So you can, you know, you can build it there. Then you have a book, and then you can have also books in different languages, sort of Chinese in particular, and a process. So the more you, rather than something simple up front, the more you look, the more you can read. Then one of the things you might do is have in the playground, just there, for no real context, the story of Rigel, the story of Betelgeuse and stuff like that, so that people can walk between these places. And this is something you learn from studying, that if you've got a unit of work and you just explain everything in the first lesson and don't let anyone explore, understand, question, marvel, you're not teaching them. So this is just a general process of teaching. And I'm now walking down Glenbrook Gorge, which I know Elizabeth and Mark will know quite well. It's a beautiful thing to do at night, and it means that I can talk. I really hope that I'm not making a clinking sound with this, so I'm going to have to get on top of it to go ahead. Okay, so there's that. So there's the forms, the web forms. So I'll start putting it in. I've just got to think about how to actually put it in a communal space to allow people to edit and comment and develop and grow and put all these things. And Elizabeth does know very much the origin, the history of the various people involved. Now, looking at this, this is something which puts the Blue Mountains, tourist-wise, in the centre of everything, because these places like Singapore will be the host of the largest star in our galaxy that we know of in our galaxy. And there's sort of several stories there. Other cities will have these fantastic stars, much more interesting than our sun. But they'll ask the question, well, why are we here? Well, we've got a system where every star, tiny star of a galaxy. So the idea is that we bring the stars retracting them in, shrink them down, bring them to Earth, and then place them distance from Glenbrook equal to the distance they are from us in space. Now, in space it's three-dimensional. On us, it's actually two-dimensional. And there's a limited range of things. It doesn't really make sense to... And the stars, as Elizabeth moves, pointed out, are moving all the time. So in this case, it's purely educational, and you can work out the fact that if it takes a month of our most fast space travel to travel, or 3 months, I suppose, to travel from Earth to Mars, right? And that's the distance of, you know, a few seconds from my little finger. How long will it take to travel to Alpha Centauri? 10,000 years. You know, what is true, that a tree, if I planted a tree, a really big tree in Glenbrook, and just, you know, let it grow, it would get there to scale. These are these huge distances, and this is to try and get some huge distances in space, in space throughout. Now, one of the things that I want us to do is really briefly cover business models. Now, I know from advance, from my MBA training and stuff like that, marketing and teaching, that we have got a much broader, lower cost base to begin, and a much broader way to actually try, particularly three or four different methods forward, and select the next one and evolve and go across. Now, Kinabaraban, which is in, there's a large telescope, Australian telescope at Kinabaraban. It's got a big white circular dome. And some have said, well, let's make that white circular dome the sun. And I think it's rather than the scale that we're operating is 1,000,000,000. The scale they're operating is 83,000,000 to 1. And 83,000,000 to 1, and the dome is of the correct size. And at the Earth, therefore, is roughly 150 dome widths away. And so if the dome is more than 10 metres away, the Earth is 1.5 kilometres away. So that's, you know, the Earth's at the front gate. And then at a much bigger distance, there are models of the planets in the outback. So this has got government money, it's backed by scientists, and it's got a very low cross-section. High expense, low visitor throughput. This, on the other hand, has a very low expense and a large visitor throughput, and also a huge footprint. It's got a footprint which is the surface of the Earth many times over, because if something's more than the Earth diameter away, so if something's more than four, so if something's more than, 4,000 light years away, you just go around the Earth a second time, or third, various times. This is to put the black hole and various things in space. So it's just a method, the method of doing it. So we know that this is a very... now, I'm going to reach the end of Glenbrook Gorge and turn around and walk back up here, and you'll hear me breathe. Now, the great thing about since the heart operation, I used to walk up Glenbrook Gorge and spend a quarter of an hour sitting just to get my breath. So I'm just very, very, very grateful of it. So we know this has been tried a number of times before, so we've got a few data points about government support. Now, what happens is that if a well-connected scientist puts it forward, and here's the grant money comes around at a cycle, he or she just has to put this forward. And I dare say that there's been a number of teaching initiative which can mix in with it, and there's a general positive support. Now, the bottom line is that I'm outside this cycle, But it means that I miss out, but I also get the data from it and be able to use my sort of business training to business and research training to go forward. And one of the things that Elizabeth really tweaked onto is people's relationship to it. Now, what I think is that we should allow people to join the Federation of the Tiny Galaxy as Federation citizens and then state citizens. So if you go to say in America, the Shelbyville, and Shelbyville is just so quintessentially, you know, middle America, and it is, it's what, bang in the middle of America. You go there, so by visiting Australia, getting a passport and something like that, you go in. But if you want to establish, now what happens is that we can't have two people claiming the same star. There needs to be some order in the galaxy, the Galactic Alliance. And we don't want rebels. Or we could have rebels. I don't think it matters all that much. But we don't want Shelbyville having it, and a richer state, or a Russian state, for instance, or a Chinese state, stealing what has now become an American star. Yeah. So we want a system where there is a period of time where people put up their option around for a star, and as a global community, we say, yeah, that's okay, you can have a star there. And there's a series of activities to do with stars which can generate a small amount of money. That's a small amount of money, because I think people need money to flow in these organisations to make sense of them. I don't, but I think people do need to. And then, what do I have money? I can sort of make the king richer. So there is actually, you may not know, there is the actual king of Glenbrook, which I've identified as truly the king of Glenbrook. And the money should go for him. But in the meantime, rather than going to the king of Glenbrook, there you say, it's not me at all. It should perhaps go to running the process of vetting the stars. So there's already a union which determines the name of planets and the name of stars and the marking of stars. And this is a story. Like, how do we know a star is that far away? Well, it's the same way that I can see how far something is away, except my eyes, by having powerful telescopes and beautiful computer memories, we have got basically a head in space, the head the size of the Earth's orbit. So we use the whole thing to see it. And the Europeans done a lot of finding these things out. But getting back to the thing which I suppose fascinated, now I'm out at the bottom of the cord and I have to start going up, and you'll hear me wheeze as I struggle to. One of the things to do is, I'm still recording. One of the nightmares is that the microphone jack goes out and I will have just been blabbing on into nothingness. Okay, so the idea of this federation now, so there's people who can be just allied to the federation but also have a home state, so it can be the United States of, you know, in Georgia, or, you know, or Venezuela, or anything like that, or Iran, you know, it really doesn't matter, and have it apolitical, and purely, and there's a method of doing it, and they put the stars up. Now, if they are in financial difficulty, say if they are a poor and emerging islander nation, or they're remote, or we want scholarships for people to go places to study space, understand space, to link in with SpaceX and all that type of stuff, we can use this as a mechanism to do what these organisations do well. And then we're going to have this global days where there's teaching activities I have, which we can actually make planet-wide. We can have a Build a Galaxy Day and stuff like that. So there are these things. So you would get your membership fairly easily as a federation. And as federation members, you then apply to join your state and your state or local area, and you'd have your star. And your star could be incredibly... There are some really incredibly interesting stars out there. And there's a whole lot of science to go across. And what we've done is we have created a... we've moved science out of the realm of the scientists and stuff like that. We've moved it out into our real world, and we've broken it down to tiny little chunks, and we have given people a whole lot of methods of doing it. So we can have a book advertising what to do in the Blue Mountains, a bit of a story of the stars, a bit of fun facts for doing it that the kids will either pick up, explain to their parents or not, and then we can have apps and various things. So we can actually build this as a structure to bring a lot of our astronomy education together. And so there is actually quite a lot of astronomy education, except its advertising is sort of narrow bound to parents, and it's tends to be location driven, in that you have to drive out to your observatory, and it tends to be short term. You go there for a short time and do it. Where here, you pick up a little bit at Glenbrook, and then this says, or you can visit this or see that, and you can, and if you want to, if the kid in your 100 kids gets obsessed with seeing one star, they want to see the next star, they'll drag and do it. So it's a slightly different thing. It's a protracted thing, and once one group of kids have seen it, they can go back to their countries or go home, talk about it, and say, "Oh well, you have to lift the question mark up and read it there, and then there's a springy thing down. You can spring down if you want to read it in Chinese. You can pull down the Chinese for it or whatever it is, and you can go in and get your passport." And your passport gives you a free chocolate star with any purchase at the Lura chocolate shop. And it, yeah, I like this. And it gives you a $2 discount at such and such for kids, you know, to do it here. And then here's these. So, now, the important thing is that information. You can actually write a huge amount of information, and what people do is they photograph it and put it there. But then you can have apps, and then you can have actually podcasts like this. So you can have podcasts, interviews with astronomers about Alpha Centauri, and go across there. Now, the structure, this is where... So it's a real structure comes into huge play. The structuring of the digital architecture is something that I'm on top of. So I'll show the web pages to do it. And I definitely don't want to get under your feet. This is just to support, but I'll produce it. So all that large... So you can imagine all this large amount of digital media out there. I have the binding to put it together. Now, the other thing is I suppose identifying Mark as your quintessential classic high integrity bankable leader, and to the true analysts and consultants, if you're a tennis coach, you don't think, oh, I'm going to win Wimbledon by getting out there myself. You really understand it. So one of the things, when the time is right, I really would like Mark to launch the Tiny Galaxy and claim the ascendancy of the Federation for, you can imagine this will go, and then we've got the template of President John F. Kennedy's 1962 famous Rice University speech. Now, we're not going to, when he gave this speech, it's a very unusual speech. It was just a university lexicon, an American flag, and a whole series of dignitaries in the back of the football field standing up, all patting themselves with heat, and he gave this rather long and complicated template story, which basically sold the unfolding story of American history, and therefore we need to take this new historical step. And he said, we choose to go to the moon. And you can see he's a brilliant orator, because he said that three times, listening to the audience and bringing it up, and doing it up. And that's, again, listening to Mark, he's also up there with the oratory skills, having a lot of practice with it. But there's the ability to actually clone and template this with a very high degree of faithful accuracy, but to globalize the message and say that the history of the Blue Mountains, human occupation of the Blue Mountains or of Australia, stretches back 60,000 years. So basically multiply everything that the Americans say by a factor of 100 for history, and structure it there, and stage it there. And it's very much staged. We're not going to be able to have the true gridiron teams behind us, but we can have that brilliant wall, the wall of Glenbrook behind us, and launched it there. And in history, this will be one of the great turning moments of, if it gets going, will be one of the great turning moments of true globalization of science. So if you look at science, it's got more wow factors, i.e. for the moon, they've got these giant inflatable moons, and their map is so they're meters across, huge and stuff, that they're things to contemplate of all. You've got these things where things of the heavens have been these various things. In the early Renaissance, the moon and the sun were perfect spheres. They had no features on it. And it was a big, big thing in art to actually draw features on the moon. So this human interaction with stars has gone through this history. Now, we've gone through this history where we've got animation and computer control. This is another step in our story. So our stars have been the bedrock of mythology. And it was believed, the Greeks believed, that every star was a spirit or a god. And so this is why they would refer to a wandering star or a planet as a powerful god. They could, it could wander through it. And they did believe that when you die, you went up there as a star. Now, looking at the broad scope of things, it's time for us to be what we're really good at. I question how good we are at technology, because we're good at technology, extending our lifetimes, but we're sort of exchanging one problem for another in terms of we're solving agriculture and starvation, but then we're overloading the planet. Now, I think technology is absolutely fantastic, but it's not to say that we can't do other things, and this is one of the other things. We're not doing it. We choose not to go to the moon because it's easy, because it's hard, and we can do those other hard things. Well, it's about time we do those other intelligent things. And this is obviously out of the box intelligence. That is, let's go through the steps. We know the distance of the stars, they're in light years. Convert them into metric. Metric has scalability built into its DNA. Use that scalability to bring a star up in space and plant it on Earth, and bring a community of understanding around it, and link those communities as a new galaxy community to go across with it. And bring our technology. So as people, I suppose, have peaceful uses of space, let this be a peaceful use of science, that rather than building drones and facial recognitions which threaten us, we build understanding and trust. And that's what we really want to do. And such a thing is fearfully hated, if I can say so. So one of the things I have noted is that people are not backwards. This is one of the surprising things, I would say, with having strokes and that type of stuff. I've got a complete statistical sample of people who've handled me. And so I don't have to go to a magazine to say 10% of people are nasty to you, and 90% are great. So it's reported. Like, I can tell you that well, look, 10% of people are on the wavelength of thinking about things beyond wealth, and obviously if you're carking it, you're not thinking about wealth, so you tend to focus on those. A good 20% of people just don't get it, and 70% of the people are angry at you, angry at everything, and that's me going out of the park. And so what they do is that they listen to this and they say, oh, well, what makes you think it's good? And you say, well, the science is good, and I've got checked out with the Australian Space Agency and the top astronomy people, and they give it a thumbs up as a really good thing. Well, what would you know? Don't rubbish me. And then, okay, so you're not going to win them on that part. And then, what do you think? Why would the Americans with the Chinese. What are the powerful nations which don't have aggressive, negative people like us running the place? Why wouldn't they take it? Why wouldn't they be negative and actually put Australia down in its place as we believe it? And I say, yeah, I've thought about that. And there's probably two answers to it. One is that taking the sun, capturing the sun and putting it in Glenbrook does do something for Glenbrook. But it means that the you get fairly, a vast majority of stars are dim, uninteresting stars. I don't know. Heavy stars are pretty interesting. But it means that the stars at a local distance in Australia are, well, they're all remarkable, but not that remarkable as these bizarre, big, bright stars. They're a long distance away. So it means that we get the showy nations, the powerful nations, have their showy stuff, and it means that the order's there. But in a sense, Australia, well, unfortunately, is chronically dumb. What can I say? We are just sort of like, if someone makes a point, makes a speech, and then someone gets up straight after them and makes the same speech, and they obviously haven't got what's going on. That's sort of like Australia. But we are sort of trusted as the honest broker a little bit. We can perhaps negotiate. And in this aspect, we are, the reason that Glenbrook is there is because we're a little bit insulated, just a little bit insulated from voracious development and destruction. I would say, whereas you probably get down in Sydney, 50% of people have been climate deniers, you'd probably get 5 or 1% climate change deniers here. Whereas in Sydney, people would say, airport's great. We say, hang on, can we think of a better technology which can do it? People in Sydney say, we want to develop, build a wall, build a damn wall up, and screw the Blue Mountains, ha 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 ha, and then we're going to build more houses in the floodplains, rather than actually saying, well, why can't we be intelligent? So the message of the Blue Mountains is, for me is, keep on fighting, and why can't we be intelligent? Why can't we save the Blue Mountains and build flood sympathetic buildings in the floodplains, which don't get destroyed by a flood? Surely that would be the simplest thing in a floodplain. If you want to build a floodplain, build buildings on poles so the floodwaters go underneath it and doesn't destroy anything, and people won't insure you against anything. Well, you know, while we're at it, we can make them flame-proof. You know, just let technology, just let our scientists have a go. And so the basic message is, this is perhaps for me a triumph of the natural response to why can't we be intelligent by actually doing something intelligent and just quietly getting on doing it. And the people who are fighting against it, they'll fight against anything. We can just quietly do it. And people won't cooperate. The nations won't work together. Oh well, because we've started off in Glenbrook this way, if they don't, they'll miss out. If they don't want to start, other nations which can work will be at the same distance away, and we can just turn our compass across and move stars, say if China, for instance. I doubt, understanding the intense astronomy in China, that will happen. But say, for instance, we could just rotate them out of China into India and Japan, same distance across. Similar thing to South America, that type of stuff. There's things that we can do, we are robust against the fundamental anger. And this is one of the surprising things that coming through. Look, you'd throw in a towel if it was a democracy of negative people, because the negative people win outright. You just have to bear them and work with the positive people and make these very so small steps that you can make because you are intelligent. And so rather than a big mass of things, basically I can start up with, basically I've got the two signs already, get the central one and start producing it. I can start already. I've already produced mobile phone websites. Everything's happening, and the project plan to get it done is not wrestling with negative people. That's just unproductive. The most productive thing is to quietly wait when it's time to speak with Mark, and then the goodwill communication, speak with Elizabeth. And because we're on the march to recreate and rebuild society, there's this thing that it's the last thing you would think of. So a business owner, they own the business and you have to come through them to do it. No, this is not the case. I don't own this concept. It's a broad one. You can come in and work quite independently in the same direction. And essentially, because there's goodwill there, really nothing can go wrong. Or if something's wrong, we can just fix it up very, very quickly. So that's what I'd like to do. And look, I'm really sorry. For huffing and puffing as I was walking out of Glenbrook Gorge, and I just really have to just really push. So if I can say, I don't know. So if you break a leg, I don't know, it's broken and it's obvious, people can see it, and it's limited. There's no expectation that you go out and kick a footy or something like that. I can't describe it. And there's not much for you to do. There's sort of exercise and stuff like that. But the stroke stuff is just, I don't know, it's sort of like trekking across the Antarctic. It's the isolation, the wind, the time, the fact that you realize that you that in society, it's such a wealth society, you are in basically a goodwill vacuum. So it's sort of like goodwill, it's sort of like the nutrition. You have to really just buckle in and work. And I think the people, maybe, I don't know, some sorry soul. If you want to, you go back to the blog and you can go back to the first couple of podcasts where I'm breathing about, so you'll be able to track it. But for me, this process has shown me just how much social fat we're carrying around with us. So I would say that social fat, well, I would call, so rather than sort of love and hate, my distinction is cruelty. People are cruel, and people, the opposite of cruel is goodwill. And unfortunately, a good number of people, and cruelty has this way of poisoning the person who uses it. So if the person who uses it, it's almost like burning their logical bridges. As they do cruelty, they burn their bridges forward, and they become myopic and can't discuss and stuff like that. But in terms of a social benefit engine, they are excess fat. We are, our economy is carrying them, and it's sort of like these little nodules of goodwill have to connect up with each other and not go by the cruelty process and get forward. And so that's very much my internal philosophy as it is, and it's the only one that can possibly work, because it is an extremely hard-fought, lonely thing. And you do your tests, and bloody hell, you haven't improved. Your memory stuff just is getting back a little bit, but you're stuffed, and it's not engaging with the cruel people, and just being polite to them. But then, week after week, when they've given up on you and all that type of stuff, what are you doing? Oh, well, thank you very much for your advice. It was cruel. It wasn't very useful. And I'm moving ahead. and in that case, it's taken a good deal of time to slowly improve. And as you know, it would have been a couple of months to speak to Mark, a couple of months to speak to you, and what will happen is I'll wait for the months for you to do it and give you support that I can, and start just moving the next sections across to see if I can get going. And so what I think I'll do is start doing a prototype web page and start doing that question mark thing to pull across, and try to work out how we can embed the information, the missing information which I found, which is about the stars. Now, this is a bloody long podcast, an hour and 20 minutes, and of course I don't expect you to listen to it, but thanks a lot if you have. And to the people overseas, who are 100 odd so people listening overseas, wish us luck, wish me luck, okay? I'm out there, haven't got much, it's like two sticks to rub together to try and change the world, but I'm trying. Thanks a lot.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.